on behalf of your client. Our thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement. And the next case this morning is Chet Cyrus versus Town of Maquonago, case number 092331. Mr. Kansky.
If it may please the court, James Gatsky on behalf of the appellants. The matter is here today following the district court's granting defendant's motion for summary judgment and the appellant's belief that Judge Randa erred in determining that and failed to recognize the sufficient factual questions which should have been submitted to a jury, specifically related to whether or not the defendant, Thomas Czarnecki, used unreasonable force against Nicholas Cyrus.
And your appeal is limited to just that issue? You're not challenging the summary judgment on the other claims in the case or against the other defendants? Okay.
That is correct, Your Honor. We believe that there remain sufficient evidence based on the remainder of the experts that we have employed to establish that, in fact, excessive force was used in this case. Specific issues related to the errors by the district court relate to the issue of flight, the definition of flight or fleeing, as a basis for Officer Czarnecki's actions against Mr. Cyrus. He made a determination that Mr. Cyrus was fleeing the scene, that he was a risk for flight. In fact, there is ample evidence in the record that indicates that, in fact, Mr. Cyrus did not flee, and was not a flight risk, and that issue of flee or flight should not have been the basis for the officer's actions in using the ECD.
What are the facts on that particular point? The briefs characterize what he was doing at the moment that he was first shot with the taser. Your brief said that he essentially turned his back to the officer and was walking toward the home under construction. And the defendant's brief said that he was running.
That's correct, Your Honor. And the homeowner who was standing in the cul-de-sac testified in his deposition that Mr. Cyrus walked. And in fact, prior to the contact that Mr. Cyrus had with the police officer, he was walking, pacing essentially back and forth. He was a mentally ill man. He was pacing back and forth in front of the property. So the fact that he walked was consistent with what he was doing before the officer even arrived.
Was he naked, or did he have just a shirt on? Or
what? He had a sweatshirt on only. He had nothing below the waist, including no socks or shoes.
No underwear, nothing.
No underwear, no nothing. Your Honor, it's critical from a common sense standpoint to recognize that Mr. Cyrus was standing on a gravel driveway, and these were large 2-inch pieces of stone. The fact that he might have turned and started to run barefoot on the gravel, I think just from a common sense standpoint, doesn't make any sense.
He was not going to outrun the officers.
He was not going to, and this officer had had several prior contacts with Mr. Cyrus, and never in any of those contacts did Mr. Cyrus fail to comply.
No history of violence, a lot of mental health problems and bizarre behavior, but no history of violence.
Over a 10-year period of time, significant mental health issues, but no history of violence, no history of threatening anyone, and no history of noncompliance with someone in a position of superior authority. And in fact, the day before, Mr. Cyrus had fled his home and had gone from Waukesha County to Rock County and had contacts with the police there. The police in that situation were able to gain Mr. Cyrus's compliance simply through talking to him. That very morning, the homeowner came to his home under construction and had contact with Mr. Cyrus and immediately recognized that Mr. Cyrus was a man who may have mental illness issues and was able to gain Mr. Cyrus's compliance again through speaking to him. And in fact, he said, "Oh, I'm in your house. Okay, I'm here to help you build your deck." And then he backed out and he called the police, expecting, I think, that the police were going to come and provide their assistance, and in fact, they didn't. There's a secondary issue, and it's a factual issue that I think is critically important, and that is the issue of compliance. And where the flight or fleeing gets into the question of whether or not Mr. Cyrus should have been tased the first time, the issue of compliance gets into the issue of whether or not he should have been tased the at least five more times and maybe as many as 11 more times. Dr. Bedricki, who is one of our experts, has testified, and her deposition is part of the record, that, in fact, he could not physically have complied. Mr. Cyrus, when he was first tased, went down and had his hands beneath his stomach.
I was confused by that. Was that part of what the district judge struck in the Daubert ruling or not?
No, Your Honor. Now,
can you properly rely upon that in as much as you haven't appealed that issue?
Well, the issue of whether or not, and I'm not sure if I understand the justice's question, but I think I do. The issue of whether or not that first instance of tasing was appropriate, I think really comes down to that question of whether or not he was a flight risk, whether or not he was a danger to anyone at that scene. So we get from that point then to the subsequent tasings, and what he's tased, he goes down, he's on his hands. The officer asks him to comply, but he's just been tased. He's also mentally ill. He doesn't take his hands out. The officer then tases him again. He does a barrel roll. And then the officer comes up and drive stuns him by sticking the taser against his back.
I understand all that. What I was getting at was I was under the impression that Judge Randa excluded the expert.
No.
And so you're now telling us what we can rely on that expert has to say, yet you haven't appealed that exclusion order.
Judge Randa excluded portions of both expert Waller and expert Bedricki's testimony, but I don't believe he excluded that portion of the testimony that relates to
that said
whether
that
or not
the tasering actually debilitated him.
Correct.
Okay.
The testimony that Judge Randa excluded, and we don't have any objection to that, is that the taser caused Mr. Cyrus to die, because there is no medical evidence that indicates the chemical breakdown of the body that caused him to die as a result of and links it to the taser. The issue of the subsequent tasings and his compliance then is really a factual issue that a jury listening to Dr. Bedricki's testimony could make a determination as whether or not Mr. Cyrus could have physically complied and removed his hands from under his stomach, placed them behind his back to allow himself to be handcuffed. It's the officer's testimony that his refusal to comply was the basis for the additional tase. I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Hall.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Sam Hall, appearing on behalf of the appellees. I think the issue that the Court is getting at is really under Graham we're instructed to view the facts of the case from the objective, reasonable officer at the scene.
How do you pronounce the name of the town?
Maguanago.
Do again?
Maguanago. It's a southwest suburb of Milwaukee.
I'm sure Judge Sykes understands that.
For many times.
At the time Lieutenant Zarnecki got the phone call from dispatch to come to the scene, he was aware of a few different things. One, there was a home invasion in Mr. Williams' home.
Well, it was a home under construction.
Correct.
Correct, so unoccupied home.
Lieutenant Zarnecki did not know that. Mr. Williams was clearly in the home, so he occupied it. He may have been working on his home, but at the time Zarnecki arrived, he wasn't aware of whether or not there was anyone else in the home. When he arrived at the
unfinished home, the home was plainly under construction?
It was partially constructed.
Are you contending this was a serious offense that the plaintiff was committing?
I believe any time, it's up to the court to characterize that, but any time there's someone that's inside of someone's home that shouldn't be there, I would characterize that as a serious offense.
How far along was the construction?
Your Honor, I don't know that that's necessarily in the record. There were clearly walls. There were doors. Within the record, there's evidence that Mr. Cyrus had taken down a mirror. So this wasn't a home that just had studs and floorboards. I mean, there was at least some furnishings in the home. When Zarnecki arrived, he also had the information relayed from dispatch that Mr. Cyrus was going inside and outside of the home, going to a garbage construction dumpster, coming back into the home. It raised Zarnecki's awareness of what's he taking from the garbage dumpster back into the home.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I just want to get to this point. Let's presume for a moment that the use of the taser the first time was proper and objectively reasonable. It seems to me that there's a question of fact on the second use of the taser. Officer Nelson testifies that the plaintiff was laying on the ground naked and that your client tased him, which caused the barrel roll. Your client says he barrel rolled first and then he was tased. If we credit what Nelson says, which of course we have to, why was the second use of the taser objectively reasonable?
First, Your Honor, I don't know that you need to accept Nelson's statement of the facts in this case.
But that's the one that's most favorable to the plaintiff.
I don't know that. There's three different stories that have been told here. One by the homeowner, Mr. Williams.
Favorable?
Pardon?
There's something more favorable in that?
I don't know that. And this brings me back to the fundamental point. Is we have proposed findings of fact that were filed with the district court. The plaintiff responded to them. My issue in coming to the court is I want the appellants to pick their version of the facts. In this case, based on the proposed findings of fact, the appellants picked Mr. Williams' side of the story. Mr. Williams' side of the story was that the barrel roll occurred prior to Officer Nelson arriving, and if that's the case, Officer Nelson's testimony of what may or may not have happened leading up to that barrel roll has no relevance because he wasn't there. Okay.
But Officer Nelson testified that I believe he was tased and then attempted to roll away from the stimulus. And if that's correct, if we assume that to be the case, how was the second use of the taser objectively reasonable?
Under the totality of the circumstances, if we assume that the first deployment of the electronic control device was objectively reasonable, we've already gone up to that level in the continuum of force. All right? Lieutenant Zarnecki gives commands. Show your hands, show your arms, so that he would essentially surrender. We've got action taken by Mr. Cyrus not doing that. He didn't surrender. Okay? And based on that reason, based on the totality of the circumstances, that we've already gone up to a deployment of the electronic control device, that's why it's objectively reasonable. The fundamental issue with there was one other question that was brought up with Dr. Bedricki. Dr. Bedricki is not an expert on the taser. She conceded as such in her deposition testimony.
She's a medical examiner. She's
correct.
An expert on cause of death.
Which was thrown out in this case.
But also on what the victim's physical injuries were.
Sure. She identified, markings that she believed were caused from the electronic control device,
right.
And we don't have any issue with that. Her testimony, to the extent that it exists, to say that, Mr. Cyrus couldn't have complied with the officer's commands is well beyond her expertise, and she conceded as much in her deposition. She conceded that she wasn't an expert in the device. She didn't understand how it operated. Moreover, the appellants have included in their brief the timing sequence of all of the potential 12 electronic control device deployments. And again, it sounds like the appellants are conceding that the device certainly wasn't used 12 times.
I don't think that's been conceded. The device objectively measured 12 uses based on the computer readout.
It registered 12 trigger pulls.
Objective evidence that it was used 12 times.
I think that's evidence that if the trigger was pulled. To make the leap that it was
there isn't any reason to pull the trigger of a taser just for the sake of doing so.
I respectfully disagree. This is outside the context of the record, but there is testimony from experts that would indicate that in a situation like this where it's tense, that officers sometimes do pull the trigger when they don't even realize that they're doing
it. But it's certainly a reasonable inference that the taser was used 12 times, and we have to draw all reasonable inferences in favor of the plaintiff. So
I think there's a fine line between reasonable inferences and coming up with speculation to create a material issue of fact. And I think that's what this is. There is no evidence objectively on Mr. Cyrus's body to demonstrate that the taser was deployed against him 12 times.
Does the taser always leave a mark?
Yes.
Every single time?
According to the medical examiner, who is the appellant's expert in this case, it does, and she found
She wasn't an expert in that.
She's an expert in identifying injuries to the body.
Right, but she can't testify as to expert opinion about whether a taser always leaves a mark. That was my question.
I'd concede that point.
Okay.
Getting back to the bigger picture here, the taser, when the trigger is pulled, has a maximum duration of 5 seconds. So even if you look at the 12 trigger pulls, there's much more than 5 seconds between the deployments. So in other words, once the initial deployment occurs, there's no more charge. At that point, the individual is free to do whatever they want with their muscles. They can surrender, they can do whatever.
But what happened here is, what I want to get at is the level of resistance, because I thought the record established that he wasn't kicking, punching, thrashing, screaming, anything like that. What he was doing was laying on his arms, correct?
At one point, we had Mr. Cyrus doing a barrel roll. Mr. Williams testified that he witnessed Mr. Cyrus stumble back up to his feet, at which point he was pushed back down by the officers.
Again, I want to focus on the second use of the taser. At the time that that was employed, if we presume that he was laying on the ground naked, and I think the record established he's not kicking, punching, thrashing, screaming, or anything else, what is the evidence that he's actively resisting? At that point, your client is waiting for the other officer to show up.
That was my client's testimony. What the issue, Your Honor, is that in the totality of the circumstances, we have an individual who fled the scene or attempted to flee the scene, and under the use of force continuum, and let's keep in mind, this started with Lieutenant Czarnecki trying to calm down the situation. All right, the homeowner, who's the only neutral party in this case that's able to testify, testifies that Mr. Cyrus was acting belligerent and that Lieutenant Czarnecki tried to calm the situation down. It didn't work. Mr. Cyrus turned his back, began to flee, and then we have the first deployment. In the totality of the circumstances, after that's happened, the use of the ECD on the second occasion is objectively reasonable. This isn't. I don't think that the court can consider this on an individual deployment basis.
Why not?
Because
agree with you that the first use of the taser was appropriate because he was trying to get back into the house, you still have to justify the next 11 uses, if that's the way the record views it. And in the absence of evidence that he's actively resisting, why couldn't a jury find that it was objectively unreasonable?
Because Graham instructs us to consider the case in the totality of the circumstances. And this isn't a case where the first taser deployment occurs when an individual is laying on his stomach, laying on his hands, not attempting to flee. You have to credit Lieutenant Czarnecki for knowing and having the information that there was an attempt to flee and that he wasn't following commands. One would think that you'd follow commands after the first deployment. He didn't. It's for those reasons that we respectfully request that the court affirm the district court. If there's no further questions, I'll sit down.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Gatzke, you have 2.5 minutes.
With respect to the issues regarding what Mr. Czarnecki knew or didn't know, Mr. Czarnecki, or Officer Czarnecki, had adequate opportunity to know as much as he needed to know as he approached the scene. First of all, he knew Nick Cyrus. He had had prior contacts with Nick Cyrus. He had had prior conversations with Nick Cyrus's family. He knew very well what Nick Cyrus's condition was. As he approached the scene, he was aware that it was Nick Cyrus who was in that house. He was aware of the contact that Nick Cyrus had had with the homeowner. He could have asked any other question because the dispatcher still had the homeowner on the line. He could have asked the dispatcher to relate any question that he wanted, anything he wanted to know with respect to the issue of how he had to be prepared so he didn't have to make, according to Graham, the split-second judgment or the superhuman judgment from Lafayette. He didn't have to make those kind of judgments because he could have had a plan. He could have had all kinds of contingencies worked out in his own mind of how he was going to deal with Mr. Cyrus when he got there. He made the choice when he got there to ignore the homeowner who was standing right next to his car. He could have asked him, are there weapons in the house? Is there anyone else in the house? Is there something that Mr. Cyrus has done that gives you reason to believe that he might be a threat to himself or someone else? He didn't. He got out of the car. He immediately approached Mr. Cyrus. And when Mr. Cyrus said, you're on my property, you need to leave, and began to pace, Officer Czarnecki shot him with a taser. I believe that actually the first tasing was inappropriate. I certainly agree with the line of questions, which clearly questions the second tase, and that all subsequent tases after that were clearly excessive. But my point is that's really a question for the jury to decide. The jury will be given ample evidence to make a determination as to whether what Officer Czarnecki did was proper or was excessive. Thank you.
All right. Our thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.